from a national perspective and best practice models, this is a very big issue right now. And creating, you know, having good quality graduates coming out. And we're not here asking for the situation that, you know, the 20 students per CI. That would not put students into a good quality educational environment. We're just asking for the ability to be able to promote and use the best practice models that are coming out from a national organizations. Still, again, the protection of the public is always in our interest, and we ingrain that into our students. We're a bit limited in Arizona because of the current interpretation of the policy and putting that into the rules.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mona, it's 2:00. We're going to talk about.
Wait. I'm going to ask that you please do agenda item. Hold on. I got to find it in my agenda. Six or 5E, proposed board meeting dates.
Oh.
Yes.
Real quick, ask a quick question.
Not at this time, but if you want to wait, our meeting's probably concluding soon.
Okay, I can wait a bit. My ride's leaving. But
okay.
All right.
5E.
I think it's 5. Is it 5 or 6?
Yeah.
5E, the 2020 proposed meeting dates.
Oh yeah.
So for those new board members, I want to let you know that not every meeting is on the fourth Tuesday for a variety of reasons.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mr. Greer is also involved in that discussion and is absent. And so for a variety of reasons, these are the proposed board dates. We give them to you ahead of time because we need to reserve the rooms now if we're going to be able to have a boardroom to have our meeting. So I am asking that you approve that these dates for the 2020 regular session board meeting.
So moved.
Well, I can't make a motion, so you can't second it. So if you could make the motion, that would be awesome. Okay, Ms. Hunter makes the motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. King seconds. Any discussion, any modifications, any dates you would like to change?
I can't think that far ahead.
This is why you were provided them over 3 weeks ago.
I know. So I don't see any issues. So
okay. And just know you can always make another motion and decision to change a specific meeting. But this helps us actually set up the calendar and reserve the room.
That's good.
Okay. So you have a first and a second to accept these board meeting dates for the 2020 regular session meetings. Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Thank you. Now you can go anywhere you want.
All right. Let's see.
Oh, he can probably get them. Let's see where they're going. Ms. Baskins is asking for a point of personal privilege.
What?
Have a little 3-minute break.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay, absolutely.
Okay, so we are going to go on break. The time is
2:00.
2:00 on the nose. Hold on.
So let's see.
We are back in session at
2:15.
Okay. 2:15. Mr. Cornwell, the meeting is yours.
Okay, let's go to item 5A, discussion AAG Baskin board training.
Okay. On this, it's process and procedures regarding initial reviews, informal and formal hearings. At this point, if there's any really quick questions that you would have that you would want me to answer at this point, I can go ahead and do that, or if there's little areas that you'd like me to address. And I think that Dr. Donahue wants to re-agendize this for another meeting so we can have a fuller discussion on this. But is there any specific area that you...
No, I think my only question is it, do you see something that we do consistently wrong?
No, I do not. No, I think you do it all very well. I think that you're one of the things that's really important to do that this board does, that once a board makes a decision on a case, whether it's an informal or a formal, if you feel that discipline is going to be imposed after initial discussion, then there has to be those three motions. The one for the findings of fact, and those would be either laid out in the formal hearing in the complaint notice of hearing. Those can be you can accept them all, you can modify them, you can remove one, and that would be the same as far as informal procedure where you would go to that informal hearing notice, look at those findings of facts. Then the next one is for conclusions of law, and then finally on your order. I think that probably there needs to be discussion, and you do have a robust discussion regarding what you would think an appropriate disciplinary order is and what should be those terms. And then I believe your executive director does a very good job of summarizing that so that the motion maker and the second and the whole board is clear on that. Because what happens at that point is, and I can really briefly talk about this, is once the board has made a decision on an order, then what happens is, let's say a formal hearing, for example, then the executive director would draft that final order based on the board's decision, and then that would go to your independent advisor for review, and that would be whoever your attorney was at that, who was presiding over the formal hearing that was advising the board, would review that, and then that document would be sent out, and it becomes effective. It needs to be sent out 5 days for mailing, and then 30 days. And within that time for appeal, the licensee or even the state, one of the parties, could file the motion for rehearing or review. And the one thing on that I do want to point out is you have a rule that whenever any one of those documents could come before the board, whether it's after an informal or after a formal, your rule, R-424-308, is really the roadmap that the board should use in making a decision. And hopefully, who's ever drafted those motions would be citing to it, because the board may grant a rehearing or review for any of the following reasons materially affecting a party's rights. And there's seven of them. And this is something that's pretty uniform amongst all boards. Some of them are a little bit different. But they do need to articulate what the board did wrong, or in their position, what they think was incorrect and why. And the reason why this is so important is because if there is an appeal, if it goes up to Superior Court for review, the court has to know what did they preserve before the board or before the Office of Administrative Hearings at the lower administrative level for the board to review. So that is really an important component of that. So that's basically, I'll kind of stop there. We can re-agendize that if there's other areas that you wish to, you know, have some training on. We could certainly do that. As far as initial reviews, I think the board does a very good job of that is your time for triage. And at that point, after you read the report, which the board, I believe board staff does a very good job of investigating, but if, for example, at that initial review, you think that another person should be interviewed, if you think, and the board has done this, I think we need additional records, that would be one of the board's options to continue for additional information. And then the board does have their options at that point. That point, you can do dismiss. You can move it to a formal. You can move it to an informal. You have your non-disciplinary CE. So that's your triage spot as far as what to do. And I think that the board does a very good job on that. Now, I don't know if you want me to move to B, which is
a question.
Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
So, and I'm not going to mention anything about the case, but if somebody comes up and wants a review of the case and nothing was done improperly by the board, why are we even considering changing it?
Well, they have the right. The board has, the parties have the right to exercise that due process right to bring up whatever they think as far as they think that there are some irregularities. Now, there is case law that says the purpose of a rehearing or review is to let the administrative body, whether it be the board or an agency, correct an error. Mm-hmm. So let's say there was an error. So let's say there was a mistake. Okay. That's the purpose of it. And it's also, it also gives a party the opportunity to preserve an issue for them to bring up on appeal and to raise. So that's the purpose of it. And as far as then, it's up to the board to make a decision on what they think based on the rule, based on the arguments that are made, and based on the evidence. So I couldn't speak to what the outcome would be, but that's the process.
Because in my way of thinking, if we hadn't done anything improper and we changed probation and fines, I'm just out there.
Okay.
Then that almost shows that we were wrong in the first place.
I would
tell you not to look at it that way.
Right.
I mean that. I would say it as, here's what the board action was. And due process allows them to go, no, I don't think that was right. Mm-hmm. And that's the point of the review or the rehearing, right? Now, I think something was amiss in that. I don't think part of it is right. And you really want that ability for them to solve every issue that they have before we make a final decision. So I would ask you to think about those rehearing requests as an opportunity for them to make sure that they feel that they have satisfied and you have satisfied their due process. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. Okay. And the other thing that you would look at, one of the basis for rehearing or review, and this is interesting, excessive or insufficient penalty. Mm-hmm. So what that implies is that the respondent or the licensee could raise the issue of an excessive penalty, but the state could also bring a rehearing or review. Now, in that case, it wouldn't be a rehearing, because a rehearing is actually asking for, I want a do-over.
Oh, it's a review.
That would be a review. I want you to take a look at the penalty based on what the findings of facts and conclusions of law were, and maybe take a second look. Okay. So. All right.
Is there a window where the board has to ask for a review?
Well, the board wouldn't be, but the parties do. And you would take a look at under your role, and you would also take a look under 41-1092, and that's the Administrative Procedures Act, which lays out all those procedures. And what it talks about is it's within 30 days. Now, when a final order is served, there's the 30 days that they have to request that, the rehearing or review. But then there's the service requirement. And under the service requirements, they get a 5 extra days for mailing. Now, even though Dr. Donahue will email it to them, it still doesn't, it's, right. They still get their 35 days. And you don't count the first day that you put it in the mail. It would start
when they received it.
Not when they received it.
Oh.
No, it doesn't. Unless you want to do personal service, unless you hired a process server to actually serve them with a copy of it. So it would be 30 days plus 5 days to mail. And Dr. Donahue as well is where we comply with that.
I was curious because in the past, I felt okay with the board's decision, the way I voted. And then 1, 2, sometimes 3 months later, I go, you know what? We really messed up. We should have done X plus Y.
Well,
and so I never thought that we could ask for a review.
Well, you can't, the board can't, because you make the decision at the time
so
based on the facts and circumstances.
You to make it?
No. I'm talking about in a formal hearing. At the formal hearing stage, the state could file a motion for a hearing or a review. It's very, very rare, and I've never done it. But the rules contemplate that the state could.
I think I misunderstood what you
were saying.
So, okay, all right.
Right, and as far as the board making a decision, you make a decision based on the facts and circumstances that are before you, and it's just not one person making the decision. It's collective. And that's the purpose of the rich discussion that the board has on these cases. And the fact that you have such detailed investigative reports, you have such a detailed investigative process. And if there's any information, as I talked about at the initial phase of it, the board members can go ahead and ask for any additional information. But that, hopefully, with the way the board researches the cases, investigates, provides you with the information, gives you sufficient time to review, you have the initial review, that's the entire process that allows the board then to make that final decision based on if it's an informal disciplinary proceeding or the formal one. And that's a decision that you make at that time. But no, as far as who can file the rehearing or review in a formal hearing case, the state can in that case. But it is very, very rarely done. So would you like me to move on to B, which
yes.
is the legislative memorandum? Now, just to let you know that this is for legislation that became effective August 27th of this year. The board has already been given, you have already received a lot of legal advice on this, and you'll see as I go through it. But I'll just very briefly touch on some of the areas. I included some things that really don't have anything to do with the board, such as the opioid legislation, but I thought because you are healthcare professionals, you would want to know, you would want that information. Senate Bill 1062 added a new section, which is 32-3226, which is address of record with the board. Before, there really wasn't a clear-cut definition. Now we have two definitions. It's either the practice address, so the business address, or the residential address. If it allows the licensee to designate which address they want. Now, if they designate their residential address, the board has to notify them that they can opt out because that will become a public address. It also includes that each licensee, and I'm just going to read this directly from here because this is kind of some dense legislation and it is new. Each licensee who is required to maintain patient medical records must have on file with the licensee's health professional regulatory board a telephone number or email address for the board to provide to a patient who is seeking medical records. So there is really a focus on allowing and making sure that patients can access their medical records. Then the next one is the Senate Bill 1086, and we have already discussed this, I know, with the temporary licenses and the board delegation to the executive director to be able to grant licenses under very, very strict circumstances, and the board already went ahead and granted the authority to Dr. Donahue to go ahead and do this. I've laid out what those requirements are. It also includes temporary licenses, but I know that this board has been aware of that temporary license option, but because of the compact that we have the ability to really to have people come into the state through the compact. But it does outline what the minimum requirements are for temporary licenses. It allows the board then to go through rulemaking if you wanted to go down that road. Now, again, I know we've talked about it. They talked about it today. And this would be the healthcare professionals workforce data repository. And I believe Dr. Donahue is already working on that.
Well, Ms. Crowley is your representative to the committee
okay.
on the minimum data set.
All right. And that is through DHS. And do you want to update the board maybe on that, Monica?
They were just going through looking at what everybody is looking for. And they did mention that not all of the boards want certain questions. So they were going to leave it open to allow certain specific questions that each board wanted. Do they have to? No. So they'll have like a basic questions that they would have to answer, and then anything else over and above, we would the other boards would have the ability to add that in.
Yes, and that is true. And again, this is going to be unique information that is not going to be a public record. So if somebody requested, I want your minimum database, it would not be something that would be a public record. And I want to just tell you, you are the physical therapy board, medical board, board of nursing, osteopathic examiners, psychology board, and behavior health boards are the only ones that are doing this. So this is pretty innovative, and I believe it's done to provide information to help the educational institutes and to provide information regarding your workforce to help strengthen the profession. So it is very unique that the physical therapy board is in there. I did include under number 4, Senate Bill 1108, electronic prescribing exceptions. And this is just to let you know that we had the Uniform Controlled Substance Act. It was amended, and it's going to be amended beginning January 2020. This is the act that requires that opioids can only be prescribed electronically. There, and it's to remove the problem with prescription pads lying around. So I just want to get you updated on that. I won't say any more. I know that the amendment required a task force on electronic prescribing that's going to be done through the pharmacy board. So just to keep you updated on that. Again, we talked about today the unauthorized practice of health professionals. And this is, again, very, very new. And, again, we talked about it today, but I just want to talk about it generically. It almost creates a new category of a complaint against individuals that are unauthorized practicing, who are conducting the unauthorized practice of a healthcare profession. It talks about once the board has verified a complaint against an individual, then that person could be sent over to the county attorney or attorney general for prosecution. And I think one of the benefits of this is that once there is a verified complaint, it will give the county attorney and it will also give the attorney general's office investigative data so that they can go forward with it. And it also does classify it as a class 5 felony. And you know that the felonies go from class 1, the most serious, to class 6. So unauthorized practice of a healthcare profession is a class 5. So it is not the lowest felony. On that. And then finally we have the issues regarding notice. We had an addition to 419305, which requires boards to post on their website and to print on applications, denial orders, cease and desist orders, and any communication that allows individuals to be aware of their ability to challenge regulations, any types of regulations that they feel do not fulfill a public health, safety, or welfare concern. So again, this is part of the whole emphasis that the rules should be narrowly circumscribed to protect the public, and there doesn't really. And that should be the focus. So this provides additional notice. And then finally, we have HB 2660, Occupational Regulation, Prior Conviction, and Applicability. This is minor amendments to 13904, which is a criminal statute that have to do with the ability for an individual to petition an agency at any time to make a determination of whether or not their criminal history would preclude them from obtaining licensure. And I know that there's another layer on this, that the board does use the fingerprint clearance cards, but this does allow individuals to go ahead and petition the board at any time to make that determination. And I believe the board hasn't had any petitions. Is that correct?
No.
Not at this time. All right. So that concludes.
So do the schools know about this in case they have a student that comes in and wants to know that they can petition the board to ask if their criminal background is going to cause them not to have?
So it's easy for us because we use the fingerprint clearance card. Mm-hmm. And so if I get the question, I ask them, there's no preclusion. They can apply for that card at any time. Okay. And it's like, go see if you can get that fingerprint card. If you can, we're good.
Oh, okay.
Right?
So if they get the card, then that's the
absolutely.
That's all they need.
That's correct.
Okay.
And then they have the option to appeal the decision of the fingerprint card. If let's say they were denied. The fingerprint card, they have the option through a separate process to appeal that decision to obtain their fingerprint card.
That's Thank you.
So it kind of takes us out of that responsibility, which is nice, even though we're still obviously responsible.
Okay. Right. And they have noticed that. Isn't this on your website? Don't you have a link to this?
Yeah.
On your website, right. So the notice is out there on that. So that's the new legislation, and I have not heard anything about what's coming up.
Oh,
well, we did hear other than what we heard today.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right.
Mona, do you need these back?
If you want me to, I think you could probably have them electronically.
Here you go.
So that if you need
I'll
to
just keep it in my binder.
Maybe part of the whole one.
So Karen, do you want to do? C and
sure, there's nothing to. I mean, if you have any discussions about it, you guys, it was requested of the board that we provide you with number of applications submitted as
yeah.
well as those that were approved. Is this the format that you would like, or is there something different that you would like?
It's fine with me.
Looks great.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as you can see, it's a hop in place in these applications.
Yeah.
I think the decision to allow us to approve, you know, non-questionable mm-hmm. applications has been really wonderful.
Oh, good.
So I think that'll be good. I will bring up, since we're under applications, that we are having a little issue with graduation dates in the January exam in that the law specifically states that they have to be, they can't graduate by the time of the exam in mm-hmm. order to get pre-approval, and their graduation dates in this year are falling after that period of time, which makes them ineligible for the pre-approval, but the transcripts might not come in time for them to sit for the exam. So I just want to let you know that's an issue we're dealing with. We don't have an answer. We're pretty hamstrung by the statutes to let them figure out what they want to do about that. But just in case you hear it, there is several schools where this graduation date has become a problem.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard. Them. I'm sure you have. So, we are moving and grooving. I'll also say, as far as applications go, that once an application is initially submitted, we are getting a response back to them within 14 days. And that is way better than what we were doing even 2 months ago. And our application pool, we're trying, our goal is to get that application, any application in process, down to 150 at any given time. Right now we're at 124. So we're trying to streamline and make the process much more effective and efficient so that the time from submittal to licensure is, or certification, is as fast as we can make it now that we don't have to wait for a board meeting.
Yeah.
So just know that we're working on those processes. So
it's a win.
You can thank Veronica and Monica, who are really
oh yeah, you guys are the dream team over
They're
there.
They're doing the lion's share of making
and
that happen.
And Donahue as well.
Thank you.
So, love it.
Donahue. All right. Anything on the financial statements you want to discuss?
The financial statements, no, you have them. We're watching them because we are going to get some. Our five-year rules review is going to happen with GIRC next week. We have been given a heads up that GIRC is going to potentially question us regarding what our licensing fees are, try to justify them, as well as why do we require CEU education and why can we justify the hours. So they have given previous boards some very significant questioning. I am prepared for those questions and answered because I was glad to get the heads up
mm-hmm.
about it. I don't know what the outcome of that means. We'll know after Tuesday. So one of the outcomes of that is that we can say that at least for an example, our last renewal brought in about $994,000, but our allocated expenses are at 153, which means essentially we are taking in less money than we predict to expend
mm-hmm.
over time, which might placate this group that we are not collecting all of these fees and additions and just adding to this big, huge fund that we have. But let me also say that we also have a reserve of $1.2 million. So, but at some point, that is going to dwindle that reserve down, but that's not any time in the next 5 years for sure that we anticipate
right.
that happening.
I thought you were going to tell us so we're not going to get a raise.
Yeah, well, it's hard to get a raise over mileage,
right.
isn't it? Yeah.
Dr. Donahue, when was the last time that the board raised those fees?
You know, we've been trying to figure that out. I don't think they've been raised since I've been practicing, which make it 28 years. So I'm going to have to think, we have not raised fees in a very, very long time because we haven't needed to.
Right.
Now, at some point in the future, probably within, probably in the 8 to 10 year from now range, which means, of course, we're going to start that earlier, we might. But it really is going to be dependent upon, because what we're seeing now is that we're continually getting more applications than usual. So it could just be that the population growth for therapy will cover that, and we will not have to do that. So we're going to have to watch that and see, is that covering the difference, right? Because that was just renewals, not applications. So
right.
Keep that in mind. So because we're seeing more applications each year, which is kind of a surprise, I thought we would see less applications because of the compact, but it's not feathering out that way. We're still seeing just as many, if not more. Right now, we're almost where we were last year, and we've got still 6 weeks to go. And so we're not quite seeing, I thought that we would have like a 12 to 18% reduction, and we're definitely not going to see that. So it could just be that the explosions of PT programs and PTs who would like to work in Arizona continues to be a very popular state to come and practice, or at least have a license, might offset any of the loss from that. So we're watching it. It's nothing to be concerned of right now, but that's what's going on.
Okay.
Mike can probably speak way more to that. That's as best as I can tell you about it.
Is there, this is off the subject, but do you know which room we're in for this continuing education committee meeting on Friday?
Oh, we're just going to be in one of the conference rooms.
In one of those little conference rooms. Okay.
Yeah.
Jane was asking, and I was like, I told her I would text her.
Oh, I can assign a room to it. They're generally never used, we'll just
look for you. Okay.
So that'll be the day that they're all. And if that's the case, we'll go upstairs. There's plenty of rooms, so we'll find one.
Okay, thank you.
So
I'll let
her meet
know.
If we meet in the lobby, then we'll go from there.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Wait, you have a motion to call the public?
Call the public.
No public. Now you have a motion to adjourn.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
All right, Ms. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Ms. Cornwell?
Yes.
Sorry, Dr. Cornwell. Mr. Clinton?
Ms. Cornwell?
Yes.
Yes. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
At 2:43. Thank you, guys.
Yes.
That was a long meeting. Thank you very, very much.
I think we, you know how we were talking about.
Yes.
This is kind of awkward.